Hello again, friends. For part two of this teaching, we will focus on the final paragraph of Acts 11. At this point, Saul and Barnabas had been teaching the congregation in Antioch for a full year. I imagine that this was a formative time for Saul in figuring out what the Gentiles don't know about God, about the Bible, about Jesus as Messiah, or about how to live as holy people in service to God. This is where Saul developed as a teacher and learned the ministry of encouragement that Barnabas modeled. Antioch is where Saul began his ministry to the Gentiles, utilizing his training as a Pharisee and his knowledge of the Bible to convey the message and the responsibility of being God's ambassadors. The congregation in Antioch also hosted believers as they traveled and as they migrated away from Jerusalem, which was becoming increasingly dangerous as tensions heightened between the Roman army and occupied Israel. The Roman Empire continued to tighten its hold on territories through taxation, public executions, and violence. This was 10 to 15 years after Jesus' crucifixion as a revolutionary. The conditions were worsening that eventually sparked the first Jewish-Roman war in 66, a little over 30 years after Jesus' execution. The Roman army would build a wall around the city of Jerusalem to starve it into submission and destroy the temple in 70 CE. But in this passage, people were still traveling fairly freely to and from Jerusalem. Acts 11, verses 27 to 30. About that time, some prophets came down from Jerusalem to Antioch. One of them, Agabus, stood up and, inspired by the Spirit, predicted that a severe famine would overtake the entire Roman world. This occurred during Claudius's rule. The disciples decided they would send support to the brothers and sisters in Judea, with everyone contributing to this ministry according to each person's abundance. They sent Barnabas and Saul to take this gift to the elders. The famine prophesied here primarily affected Judea and Syria from 46 to 47. And these relief efforts supported the believers in Jerusalem since the Roman Emperor Claudius focused on the food supply for Rome at the expense of occupied territories. This is a reminder that food insecurity has long been part of the human experience. Between droughts and floods and crop failures and greed and mismanagement by governments and empires, much of human migration has stemmed from food scarcity. Biblical examples include Abraham and Sarah, then Isaac and Rebekah traveling to neighboring countries when food got scarce. From Genesis 26, 1 through 3a, when a famine gripped the land, a different one from the first famine that occurred in Abraham's time, Isaac set out toward Gerar and toward King Abimelech of the Philistines. The Lord appeared to him and said, "Don't go down to Egypt, but settle temporarily in the land that I will show you. Stay in this land as an immigrant, and I will be with you and bless you." Later, in the next generation, Jacob and his descendants all moved to Egypt during the seven-year famine when Joseph presided over Pharaoh's storehouses and amassed enough grain to feed all the surrounding areas at a steep cost. It seems like there's a famine about once every generation. Much later in the biblical narrative, the book of Ruth opens thus. During the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. A man with his wife and two sons went from Bethlehem of Judah to dwell in the territory of Moab. The name of that man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife was Naomi, and the name of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They entered the territory of Moab and settled there. famine, food insecurity, and human migration to escape starvation are all part of the biblical story and continue to be part of our experience today. So it is helpful to look at how the early believers responded to issues of food scarcity as a model for how we can respond in our own time. Remember that early in Acts, the first complaints arising among the followers of the way were that some of the widows were getting better food distribution than others. Neither the Roman government nor the established religious system were meeting all the needs of the most vulnerable in the population. The fellowship of believers was trying, but they needed better administration and distribution in order to serve all the widows equitably and sufficiently. Now, 8 to 10 years later in Antioch, we see that the new Gentile believers, having been taught by Saul and Barnabas for a year of immersion in the scriptures in the way of Jesus, respond to the prophecy that there will be a famine by taking up a collection to help their Jewish brothers and sisters back in Jerusalem and Judea. Generosity and mutual aid to meet physical needs, particularly hunger, is one way God provides. The Gentiles in Antioch learned this from Saul and Barnabas and responded accordingly. I would like to briefly point out that here in Acts, approximately 10 years after Saul's experience of Jesus on the road, our writer Luke still refers to him by his Jewish name Saul, even though he's been hanging out with Gentiles for about a year. Saul never stops being Saul. He never stops being Jewish, and he never stops being a Pharisee. His experience completely changed his life and his understanding of God's plan through Jesus the Messiah. But his passion for Torah and the way of God never diminish. It is not until later in Acts 13 that Luke mentions that Saul is also known as Paul, and then shifts to calling him by his Greek name, Paul, as he travels and teaches more and more among the Gentiles. So while many of us grew up being told that when Saul, quote, converted to Christianity, he changed his name to Paul, that doesn't accurately reflect his narrative or the timeline of Saul becoming known as Paul later in his ministry to the Greek-speaking world. So, returning to Acts 11, verses 29 through 30, the disciples decided they would send support to the brothers and sisters in Judea, with everyone contributing to this ministry according to each person's abundance. They sent Barnabas and Saul to take this gift to the elders. I love the way Luke states this. Everyone contributed to the ministry according to each person's abundance. What a beautiful example of collecting a special offering to send resources from those who have plenty and extra to those who will experience need. Ahead of time, even, so the funds are ready when the food begins to run out. What a gracious God to send word to prepare the people to provide for believers who may not yet even know that a famine is coming. Barnabas and Saul take the gift to the elders as encouragement and tangible support, and perhaps as a thank you for sending prophets and encouragers to the new church in Antioch so that they too can grow into mature believers. Today we have an opportunity to provide support to those in our own community who are experiencing food insecurity. Throughout the month of November, New Covenant is collecting a special Thanksgiving offering for 3 organizations that assist immigrants and provide food to hungry residents and college students. Today, Dawn from Wesley Food Pantry will share about their ministry as one of the 3 recipient organizations. To contribute out of your own abundance to this effort, your donations to New Covenant Fellowship with the memo line Thanksgiving Offering will be distributed to these organizations. May God bless our generosity and multiply our offerings to meet the needs of our brothers and sisters. Amen.